Welcome to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and my guest is Erin Gibson, who is debuting her documentary film, Two Elephants. Erin Gibson teaches journalism at the University of Southern Indiana, and her husband, John Gibson, is the, well, he's the news guy here at WNIN-FM. Welcome, Erin, and you've been chasing down this story for years. So what got you hooked on the tale of these two elephants?
I have a hard time identifying exactly when it happened, but I know it had to have been at least 8 years ago that I heard an interview on the television or on the radio with someone familiar with Mesker Park Zoo who told a story about Kay the elephant and how after she left here in Evansville in 1954, that she had been killed. And I had a hard time believing that because I was familiar with Evansville history and Mesker history and knew that Kay had fatally injured Bob McGraw, the zoo director. And on his deathbed, he asked specifically that she not be punished or destroyed for doing that. So I had a very hard time just accepting that that would have been what happened to her. I knew that elephants in that part of the century had been punished in terrible ways for acting out and had been termed bad elephants or rogue elephants, and that they would be executed or, you know, euthanized. But I just couldn't believe that given his instructions and his request, that that would have happened to her.
Now, let's get back to the beginning here. Now, the first elephant at Mesker Park Zoo was Kay, and that was back in 1929. And then the second elephant, Bunny, replaced her in 1954?
Yes.
Okay, so let's go back now. Evansville's desire to have a zoo. There are several key players in all of this, including newspaper cartoonist Carl K. Connect.
Yes. Connect is a larger-than-life character in Evansville history. And I don't believe that we give him enough credit now for all of the things that he was involved in. But one of the things that he was involved in was the creation of Mesker Park Zoo. In 1928, somebody gave him a pair of lion cubs. I mean, imagine that, being a newspaper cartoonist, and someone says, here, here's a couple of lion cubs. Now, that wasn't completely out of the blue. He loved circuses, and he loved zoos, and he loved elephants. So he had some connections with zoos, and so it wasn't just a random gift for him. But he helped Mesker Park Zoo become what it is today. It began out on its original site, the site where it is now. It was called Oak Grove Park, Oak Summit Park. And he decided that if they were going to have a couple of lions, then they were also going to have a real zoo with an elephant.
And I think I have the name of those lions, Bell and Brutus.
Yes.
The two lion cubs. And I understand there was no building to house them.
No.
So they were housed in a barn?
Actually, that was what happened to Kay. Now, Bell and Brutus, I don't know where they were kept when they first came, but they went ahead and built a lion den or a cage for them on the property of the zoo. And I actually have some photos in the film of that first building or that first small structure at Mesker with those two lions in that. So then Kay, we'll get to what happened to her and why she didn't get to stay on the zoo property when she got here.
Now, this Mesker Park Zoo, named after George Mesker of Mesker Iron Company, he donated the land. I think it was about 40 acres, and you said it was Oak Summit Park.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first building, also named after a major sponsor, businessman Charles Clay, is it?
That wasn't a first building, actually. That was the second building. The Clay building didn't arrive until after Bunny got here.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. Actually, it was under construction during the last few months of Kay's life here.
So when was the first building put up at the current site?
Okay, so that was the General Animal House, and they did not have that when they decided to get an elephant. They they put the elephant before the building, it sounds like. Kay arrived here in 1929 to much fanfare. And they had an enormous parade. The whole city almost shut down. I think classes were out that day. It was on Flag Day, June 14th, 1929. And so they had this huge celebration welcoming her here. They marched her through the city all the way to the zoo from downtown. She was on a float for quite a while. I'm not sure if she walked any of that length. But then they had to turn around and take her to the home of the first zoo director, Clem Kevacordis. And he had a house on Washington Avenue near Patchwork Central, as far as I can tell. And she lived in his barn, in his backyard, for the first part of her life here.
Now, I know Carl K. Connect, of course, the famous cartoonist with the Evansville Courier for many, many years, also photographer and bon vivant, everything. And I got a chance to meet Carl K. Connect.
I'm envious.
And his wife, Jenny?
Janie. Mm-hmm.
They had a condominium out on the east side, and I was working for the Sunday Courier and Press at the time and did an article on some kind of historical article and got to go up to the penthouse and meet him and his wife. He had a visor on his head, a bow tie, classic look, and he had a big drawing board. Mm-hmm. So that's a great memory.
That drawing board. Oh, yes. It was just a part of his life. He was an artist on top of everything. Cartooning was just one of his expressions of his art, and he actually studied at the Art Institute of Chicago. So he was professionally trained.
And of course, with his cartoons, he did a lot of promotion for this, the arrival of Kay. Now, also, there was a campaign involving the children of the community mm-hmm. to bring Kay here.
Mm-hmm. He announced in the Courier and also the Evansville Journal was also owned by the same company, the two newspapers he wrote for both of them. And he announced on the front page, because that's where his cartoons appeared. How unusual that is to us today to think about a political cartoon or that kind of social commentary on the front page of a newspaper. So that's where his newspaper cartoons appeared, is on the front page, and he announced in March of 1954 in March of 1929 that they were going to get an elephant, and he encouraged school children to donate pennies and nickels and whatever amounts of money they could. And then he ran what he called the honor roll on the front page every day, which was a list of every person and how much they donated.
How
so
smart.
If you look at that newspaper, you can track that money going up and up and up.
My guest is Aaron Gibson, and we're talking about two elephants, Kay and Bunny, both iconic figures in the history of Evansville's Mesker Park Zoo. Okay, the money started pouring in during this elephant drive, and when enough money was raised, where did the city find an elephant?
Well, all along, Connect was using his connections in the zoo industry, and so he was put in contact with the Hagenbeck brothers, or the Hagenbeck Tier Park, and then also John Benson. And from what I can tell, so Hagenbeck was in Hamburg, Germany, and this was a wild animal dealer. And so many elephants and many wild animals passed through this organization in Hamburg, Germany. And they had a relationship with John Benson in Nashua, New Hampshire, at Benson's Animal Farm. And so what we know is that the Hagenbeck family would acquire animals, which means going and capturing animals in places like Burma, which is where Kay was when she was born. What we don't know, and what I cannot find, is the exact spot where Kay came from. I cannot be sure that she was wild captured, or if she was captured in captivity, if she was already born into captivity, mm-hmm. or if she was born into the wild. What we do know is that she was 5 or 6 years old when she was sent to the Hagenbeck Tier Park in Germany. And that is a pretty significant age for an elephant. And what we know now about elephant memory, she probably had a lot of trauma considering how old she was. And she probably remembered a lot of her where she came from by the time she even got to Germany.
What was the purchase price?
I believe that they raised over $3,000, I believe. And I think that she was, I can't remember the exact price, but they didn't get just an elephant. They got a few other animals, including, they threw in a zebra at the last minute. Yes. So several other animals traveled with her. But again, they raised over $3,000 to get her at that time.
She would have to arrive by ship?
Yes, they put her on a ship in Burma. Actually, she was walked to a seaport in Calcutta and put on a ship in Calcutta. And she was on that ship 2 to 3 months, if you can imagine.
Oh, my goodness.
And I wish I knew that route. I wish I had a map of that route. So then that took her to Hamburg, Germany, mm-hmm. where she started her training. She
was trained there. As a circus elephant?
She was being trained as a zoo or circus elephant. Okay. Most of the elephants in zoos and circuses were performing elephants.
Okay.
They all did do some kind of tricks.
Okay.
So, and they were also just training her to be handled. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to some of the ideas about training elephants a little bit and what that means. That sounds it's a very polite word considering what was really happening. So she was started her training there in Germany, and then she was placed on a ship and came to she arrived in the port of Boston, and then I don't know if she got on a train there and then went to Nashua and then continued her training there, and then she arrived in Evansville via a train.
What a journey.
Yes.
And of course the arrival of Kay was a big deal. Like you said, they had a parade. And tell us about the size of Kay.
Kay, a 6-year-old elephant, is not as large as you might think. I think a lot of people think that they're full grown, and they are not. So this is an Asian elephant, yes.
Right.
And so you can also tell the difference between Asian elephants. The biggest tell is their ears.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have those smaller ears closer to the head, that's an Asian elephant. If you see the ones that fan out like big palms, mm-hmm. those are African elephants.
And I must say something. You're wearing elephant earrings right now. Just wanted to add that visual for the folks.
These earrings actually are with me most of the time when I've been working on. So if I've been sitting in a library or a coffee shop and researching, or if I'm interviewing about it, I bring these with me. I want to always have two elephants on me when I'm talking about them.
So the size of Kay.
So you look at Carl K. Connect, and he was not that tall of a man. But when you see the original photo, he actually traveled to New Hampshire to meet her. And photos ran in the newspaper of Carl meets Kay was the headline. And he stands above her. He is taller than her. And he wasn't that tall of a man.
Mm-hmm.
So she was probably up to his shoulders at that time. But of course, she grew and grew and grew mm-hmm. and became a pretty large beast.
Well, the name Kay, does that come from Carl K. Connect?
It does. Many people, when they found out that they were going to get an elephant and they knew how much Connect wanted to have or was driving this and making this happen, many people suggested that they name her Kay. And his middle name is actually K-A-E. So Carl K. Connect. So all of his initials are K's, and then his middle name is K. But they decided to name her K-A-Y because she was a female, and they thought that it really reflected her.
Well, coming up, we're going to ask Erin about this relationship between Kay and her longtime keeper, Roger McGraw, McGraw's tragic death, and the controversy that followed as Erin tries to solve the mystery of what happened to Kay. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. My guest is Erin Gibson, a journalism instructor at the University of Southern Indiana, who is debuting her documentary, 2 Elephants, on WNIN Channel 9. The two elephants are Kay and Bunny. Kay was the main attraction at Evansville's Mesker Park Zoo from 1929 to the early 1950s. There are postcards of Kay, and Kay's popularity spurred the growth of the zoo. New buildings, monkey ship, all that stuff?
Yes, yes. And that building that they built for her, she arrived in. And, of course, when she first arrived, she was smaller. And so, but as she grew, she certainly outgrew that building. And but they never moved her. There was a lot of talk about finding or building a new building. And it's my theory that from what I can tell, World War II really put a damper on their plans to try to get her a new building. They could not commit funds to doing something like that during the war effort. So the zoo grew while she was there. She performed, and in fact, the beginnings, some early beginnings of Mesker Amphitheater were during her time. They built a little stage for her that looked kind of like a castle. It was on a hill. And in fact, it was where the clay building is now. If everybody's familiar with Mesker Park Zoo and where Bunny the elephant used to, where you would go visit her, the clay building, before that building was built, Kay's stage was there. So she would do daily performances and tricks on that stage. During this time, you know, that's when the other things started happening. And in fact, Gilmore Haney, who is, you would all recognize the name Haney from Haney Travel. He and his wife were big travelers. I think he was also an architect or a builder of some sort. And he is responsible for bringing us the open lion pits and the open bear pits, because when he would travel, he found these cageless zoo exhibits over in Germany, and he came back and made those happen, as well as the monkey ship.
What about attendance at the zoo in those early years? Was it Indiana's first zoo?
I don't believe it was Indiana's first zoo. I'm not quite up on the exact zoo history, but I do know from my research that I would see the articles about zoo attendance every year being up. Mm-hmm. From what I've heard and talked to people, that the zoo at the time was a very good zoo. It was a huge attraction. It was a major attraction for Evansville, and it was a destination for many people, and it was well respected.
Of course, the train travel then, people would come in from other cities, and like you said, Kay was a major attraction. There were postcards featuring Kay, and probably other merchandise as well.
Yes, and headlines. I can't tell you. I mean, I downloaded every headline about her. And it was, I mean, there would be hundreds and hundreds of deadlines or headlines in the newspapers. So I have a folder system on my computer, and I have every year there's hundreds of articles that I had to go through. They tracked her weight every year. You know, every time she would get weighed, they would report in a story. And of course, Carl K. Connect worked for the Evansville Courier. And one thing I did notice is that the Courier reported on her a whole lot more than the Evansville Press did.
Well, it sold newspapers. I'm sure it did.
It did. And it you know, I keep describing newspapers as being a character in and of it themselves in this documentary, because the way I tell the story, I have people voicing. I didn't want to do a voiceover. I didn't want to have a narrator. And so I pulled passages from newspaper articles, and I cast voices to read those. So every word that is spoken from someone that's not being interviewed is from the Evansville Courier, the Evansville Press, the Evansville Journal.
Now, let's set the stage now. Evansville Courier was still the morning paper then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the Press was the afternoon paper?
I'm not clear on whether the Press, I believe that they were, but I wasn't really paying attention to what their publishing schedule was
so
at the time.
So there were three papers at one time?
Actually, the Evansville Courier and Journal were here together, and then the Journal kind of merged and it became the Evansville Courier and Journal.
But they were competitors.
And then the press was their competitor, definitely.
Okay. All right. So there's some dynamic going on between the two newspapers.
Certainly.
Trying to get advertisers and readers. Okay.
Well, and here's the press. You know, the Courier is doing this huge effort to get this elephant and then also promoting her all the time. And the press is obviously taking the more critical viewpoint and not always just doing the promotions and publicity for the zoo.
Okay, now, here we get to the plot of the story here. Mm-hmm. Now, during the time that Kay was here, there were, I understand, two incidents involving zookeepers. The one that people haven't heard much about, I think, is Jack Mayer, the part-time employee who died in 1938. Let's talk about Jack Mayer first.
We know very little about him. He was 17 or 18 years old. He was, I think, a part-time employee. I've seen him described also as a volunteer at the zoo. Apparently, he was interested in studying zoology. And at some point, there was a newspaper article reporting that this teenager was in the hospital with an abscess and having surgery because of this abscess. And there was only the Evansville Press really speculated that it was related and tied it to the K. He didn't report the injury until a couple of weeks after it happened, or a week and a half, for many days. And so I'm unclear as to if Kay was involved. I suspect she was in some way, but I also suspect maybe he didn't report what happened because maybe he was in an area he wasn't supposed to be. But what we know, the story is that she somehow pushed him into a water spigot on a wall and created an injury. Mm-hmm. But he died after surgery or during surgery. It's been a little bit of a mystery. When Connect wrote about it in the Courier, he never once mentioned Kay. He sent his regrets and his thoughts to the family.
Okay, and later the more publicized death of Roger McGraw, that was in 1954, is that right?
Yes, January.
Now, Kay, did she have a reputation of being a temperamental animal?
She did. I mentioned earlier that she, was pretty old for an elephant to be captured and probably had some pretty rough experiences getting here. Along the way and during her training, I use air quotes for the word training, she had many incidents a few years after she got here. I think 1933 was a pretty rough year for her. Many articles about her chasing a keeper around the performance ring of her stage, crushing a zookeeper's hand up against the bars of her cage. So there were some moments that she lashed out. By the time of the World War II, Bob McGraw was called up for Navy service. And by this time, he was going to have to be shipping off.
Now, they called him, it's Roger, but
they called him Bob.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right. And he was the only person at that time who would go in the cage with her and take care of her feet. And foot care for elephants is one of the most critical parts of their care, is making sure, especially when they're not living on natural surfaces and not being able to walk miles and miles and miles every day, they need to have their feet cared for. And he was the only person by the time he left for World War II that would do that. And that caused a situation at the zoo. They sequestered her even further. They made her cage even smaller so that they could feed her No one was taking care of her feet during his absence.
So there was some separation anxiety, you think, going on with Kay?
Well, I think she was just feeling very trapped during these year or during this year. He came back at some point and visited and took care of her. But, you know, she tore down a partition door during this time. They were just kind of shoving food at her. They really weren't cleaning up around her because people were fearful of her. So when he returned, by the time he returns, she'd been through this horrific ordeal. She wasn't going outside. She was being kept in a very small area.
Her enclosure. Mm-hmm. Now you talk about cage. Mm-hmm. Cage is where she'd go in to be fed and
she lived there. There was a time she wasn't being let out for a long, long time. There were many, many long periods of time where she did not see the outdoors. So you can see how we're building up mm-hmm. to what happens in 1954. This elephant has been through so much by this time. By 1954, Bob McGraw had been promoted to the zoo director. He had been her keeper for much of the time she was here. I'm not quite sure what year he arrived, but he was with her most of the time at Mesker and was the keeper who she was closest to.
Let's talk about the incident that led to McGraw's fatal injuries. Can you kind of set the scene for us there?
It's early in the morning at the end of January of 1954. Her keeper was in the hospital for some reason. So Bob McGraw was stepping in and being her temporary keeper, even though he was the zoo director. Mm-hmm. He arrived before everyone else. No one was there. He went in and as far as we can tell, he was cleaning her cage. He would work in close contact with her. There was no barriers between the two of them. From what is reported in the newspapers, it sounds like a mop handle hit the floor and startled her. She picked him up, she threw him, and he described to his wife that she put her full weight on him and crushed him. He was able to pull himself to the corner of the cage, and that's when people arrived. Who knows how long he'd been there, but they took him to the hospital, and he lived for 6 days. He begged from his deathbed they not punish her. He called out the Parks Board directors by name and said, you know, make sure he does not punish her for this. And then he died. Mm-hmm.
So the death, I'm sure that was reported in the newspaper.
It was. It was massive headlines. Zoo director battered by Kay, zoo director, zoo director dies. Carl K. Connect was very quiet during this time. When she injured him, injured McGraw, he wrote a column and sent out his sympathies and but automatically, you see him torn. You see him speculating about why Kay would have done this. This was not the first time that Connect had come to Kay's defense. In those previous incidents, when she was behaving badly, he defended her. There were a couple of articles and even a cartoon back in the 30s that he was, you know, arguing that, you know, treating her, that she had some bad treatment from some keepers and from zoo visitors. There were a lot of opportunities for zoo visitors to hand the elephant anything. Lit cigarettes or cigars pretending that they were going to feed her peanuts and then grabbing them away from her. So he was very sympathetic to her. And so when McGraw is injured, he had both of his friends here in jeopardy, and he knew that, and he felt terrible. And of course, he's why we even had an elephant in the first place. So I think you start to see this wear on him. And when McGraw dies, he writes about him dying. And there's not a lot more after the fact that he writes about Kay.
Well, we're talking to Aaron Gibson, who has a documentary coming out called Two Elephants. It's going to be seen on WNIN Channel 9. And we were talking earlier about the quote-unquote training of elephants. And you said that word is used pretty loosely. Sometimes people might describe that as inhumane or not very good treatment to animals,
yes.
Definitely. So explain how these animals were trained.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I love about the way I've been able to tell this story is that you can see how elephant management has changed over these decades from one elephant to the next. And when we start talking about Bunny, we're going to see the transition happen while she is in Evansville. The previous ways of training an elephant, first of all, I mentioned that circuses and zoos were making their elephants were performing animals. It wasn't enough for people to go and just see these massive, beautiful creatures. They wanted to see them do things. So you look up elephant tricks and you're going to see elephants sitting on their hindquarters, standing on two legs. I've seen a photo, I believe, of Kay, a trainer, taught her to lay down on him, like totally lay down on him. These are things that are not natural. In order to get them to do that, they had to punish them. They used a very heavy-handed, break their spirit kind of way. In my research, I've seen some just terrible videos, both about how elephants in the wild are captured and taken, and then also how they are trained and how using ropes and also a tool called an elephant hook those were used to manage them. And an elephant hook is a long stick that has a metal barb at the end of it, and it is supposed to be used to guide the elephant, but people would use it and jab them and stick it in pretty hard and pull and who knows what else. So that is, you know, breaking the elephant to make it do what you wanted it to do.
Right.
And the shift came during Bunny's time, and we'll talk about some of
that's
those
right.
Things.
That's a good time to pause here. Coming up, we're going to talk about the transition from Kay to Bunny and also about Aaron Gibson's search to find out what happened to Kay after the death of the longtime zookeeper, and also the making of the documentary, Two Elephants. Two Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Stay with us. This is Two Main Street. I'm David James, and if you're just joining us, my guest is Aaron Gibson, a journalism instructor at the University of Southern Indiana, whose search to find out what happened to the Mesker Zoo elephant Kay led her to make this documentary called Two Elephants about Kay and Bunny. Now, we talked about Kay and the death of the zookeeper and the zookeeper's deathbed wish that Kay not be punished. So, Kay disappears. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Bunny replaced Kay after the death of Bob McGraw. So the second elephant, Bunny, now where did Bunny come from?
Bunny was also an Asian elephant, and also she came from India. I have not tracked her as far as I did Kay. But she arrived and she was much younger, and that was what the selling point was. And it is not lost on me that after this violent incident where we lost a beloved member of our community, that they would get a smaller and gentler elephant and name her Bunny. I believe that was a purposeful PR move on the part of the zoo. What surprised me was to learn some of the things that I, you know, didn't know and no one knew, which was Bunny came here and Kay was still here when Bunny arrived. And so that was something that no one had ever talked about before. But we'll get to what happened to Kay a little later. But Bunny arrives, and she begins her time in the same building that Kay was being kept. But then the next year, 1955, the year after Kay left us, the Clay Building opened up. And this building had been under construction this entire, for that entire previous year while the zoo was going through this horrible tragedy. That building was meant for Kay. They were trying to give her more of an outdoor experience and a bigger cage. So Bunny reaped the rewards of that.
Ironic.
Yes, yes. And every time I walk into the Clay Building, I see the plaque there that has the 1955 on it. And I think about Kay, mm-hmm. and I take a moment.
Did Kay and Bunny ever interact?
Not that I can tell. It appears from the articles that I've seen that they were kept separate. But I can't imagine that they didn't hear each other because they were in the same building.
And, of course, Bunny was here for a long time.
Yes. So Bunny didn't garner as many headlines as Kay did. Imagine that. We don't have a newspaper cartoonist, promoting her the way we did with Kay. She made a splash when she got here, and there were some articles. Much to my surprise, I learned that Bunny was not alone the entire time she was here. An elephant named Saranya came along shortly after Bunny arrived. She was an African elephant, while Bunny was an Asian elephant. And the two interacted quite a bit in the yard. And from what I have gathered, Saranya was a little sassy. African elephants are known to be a little bit more pushy. And I think she was a little pushy with Bunny. Saranya died a couple of years, maybe even a year later. And then Bunny was alone. And she, during this time, there wasn't a lot written about her. Every once in a while, we'd have a photo in the paper. But we don't really start hearing much about her again until the mid-80s. And then this is when Ron Young became the zoo director. And he was here while and tried to get her some companions. And so over the course of maybe 4 or 5 years, there were some elephants that came and went. We had elephants on display and on loan from other zoos. There was Peggy is the one I was thinking of. There was also a young elephant named Digger, who we purchased, but we didn't keep him very long and we sold him.
So it's a tale of many elephants.
It really is. And that's what surprised me, because I had this, this is what you do. You go and find out what the actual story is. Newspapers and our memories are kind of the first version of history. And then mm-hmm. you have to go back and you have to put all the pieces together. There are some pretty lovely photos of her with other elephants. But then she's alone again. And in the 90s, it starts becoming apparent that the loneliness is wearing on her and the facility is wearing on her. Her feet are not in great shape. Talked about foot care being so critical, and her feet were becoming quite a problem. She had some open sores on her face and on one of her hips that would not heal. They kept her pool drained. She had an outdoor pool. Everybody remembers probably the outdoor pool outside the Clay Building. As the older she got, the more they had to keep that pool drained, because she wouldn't dry off completely before she could go in, and that would break down her feet even more. And she just started having arthritic issues and all those kinds of things. So.
And then the decision was made to really retire her.
Yes, and boy, did that cause some noise in this community. So we have this single elephant, and when you think of zoos, you think of elephants. And they began exploring the idea, because a woman at in Hohenwald, Tennessee, named Carol Buckley, approached them because she had started an elephant sanctuary. And she wanted, her goal was to make sure that female Asian elephants didn't live alone. And so she started looking around and looking at zoos that had female Asian elephants that were living alone. And she contacted Ron Young and others at the zoo and said, I'd love to provide Bunny with a place where she can have roam a larger area and have elephant companions. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the newspaper started writing and the news media began reporting on this, that is when the community started becoming divided onto what to do for Bunny.
Well, and Bunny lived out her years at this sanctuary in Tennessee, mm-hmm. and I'm sure she had a good final couple of years there. I know her death was a big story here, mm-hmm. too. I remember covering that when I was working for the television station. Okay, now we go back to the big question that has haunted you for years. The fate of Kay. So when did Kay disappear? Was it an overnight thing, mysteriously disappeared? What happened?
So I'm going to be careful about answering my questions, but I will provide some information that people didn't know before, but I do want to make sure that everyone sees the film in context.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Kay did stay longer in Evansville than I ever imagined she would have. She stayed through the rest of that year, they were trying to sell her. Or trade her.
How old was she then?
She, at this point, oh gosh, that's going to make me do some math. but she was not an old elephant. She was a pretty young elephant.
Okay.
So 1920, we think that she was born in around 1923, I believe. And this is 1954. So they traded her. But the people didn't come and pick her up right away. She was traded. We do know that she was traded into to a circus dealer. And from there, I can tell you she did not live very long. She was traded to this circus dealer, was eventually sold to a circus owner. The big reveal will be made in the film as to where I tracked her down.
Now, she was traded after Bunny arrived,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yes. And when they loaded her up and she left Evansville, it was covered in the newspapers. There was a photographer there. There are photos. Here's the sad thing about photos and newspapers. Again, that newspaper character keeps coming back around.
Mm-hmm.
When we put newspapers on microfilm or microfiche, they turn into these big black blobs. You cannot see detail. So we don't have the original photos for a lot of these. And so it's so sad. I've been very passionate about telling everyone about how we need to be making sure we preserve all of these photographs, because just because they're in the newspaper, we're not going to see them in full. And I really wish I had those originals, because the images are troublesome as they are in black and white, but I would love to see the full image.
Now, there was some, I know this research took a long time, and you ran into some roadblocks, I'm sure, in trying to find out what happened, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that's all included in the documentary. When did the idea of putting this documentary come together?
Well, the roadblocks actually were from the very beginning. So again, I'm sure that I started thinking in terms of this as a film probably about 8 years ago. Created a little folder on my computer and just started dragging every link I could find when I would Google. But the problem was the newspapers here, the archives, only went back to 1992 as far as digitally. And digging through microfiche and looking through that was very difficult. So I would just spend a lot of evenings just while watching television, kind of looking around and seeing what I could find. I found confirmation of, or alleged confirmation, of what happened, what I had heard originally had happened to Kay. I'd heard this horrible story about her, how they had euthanized her. And I found it on a website called the Elephant Encyclopedia. And I was like, oh, wow. So it did happen. This is crazy. But then I started digging a little deeper and I was like, well, where's the sourcing for this? Because it was on a spreadsheet. And so I started looking and then it had a source. And I went to that source and that source was a blog, which was anonymously run by a former circus person. And the blog, it wasn't even the blog post. It was a comment below that blog post that someone said, Kay, this is what happened to Kay. And again, an anonymous commenter. So this was not good information. This was not factual. It was all hearsay. And so that really started me on wanting to correct the record. So when the Evansville Vandenberg Public Library received $1 million grant to digitize all of Evansville's newspapers, that was about 4 or 5 years ago, I believe. And that is when everything, the floodgates just opened up. I used the EVPL search on that database. The Historical Newspaper Database is just a wonderful resource. And it finally opened up and all the puzzle pieces were on the table. And I was able to track down each one of those and take them where they led me.
Now, is there a message in your film about... Do you have a kind of an agenda with this documentary?
My agenda was to correct the record and to tell the complete story. I was bothered that Evansville history was just, and then they traded Kay for Bunny. I, knowing that we celebrated her with a parade, knowing that she was in the newspaper all the time with these headlines. She drew all of these crowds. People loved this elephant. And despite her acting out and all of her the problems that she had, there was this affection for this elephant. And the fact that they traded her, trying to just make her go somewhere else after this tragedy, told me that they cared enough to not destroy her. But to make her disappear completely from our history, she was an elephant. She went somewhere. And I wanted to know where that was, and I wanted to know what happened to her. And if I've been referring to her as an ambassador for elephants, she is now able to speak through me and that her story can tell us something about what we learned about elephants in these last decades. We know more about their memory. We know more about their emotion. We know more about their family ties and that they're how important it is that they live in groups. And we saw that through Bunny at the sanctuary. She adapted beautifully there. She lived there for 10 wonderful years. As part of that elephant herd. And we also saw during Bunny's time that, the kinds of hard-handed, heavy-handed training that Kay experienced, Bunny experienced that, and then it switched about in the 80s where they started putting the elephant hooks away and they started doing more a reward system rather than a punitive system. And the reward system wasn't to make her do tricks. It was to take care of her. Bunny, we need to clean your feet. Could you put your feet up here? And rewarding her when she would put her foot up so that they could file her nails. So the two of them together have been able to represent the larger story about elephants in captivity. And that's my message.
Well, I think it's also a tribute to Bob McGraw, too. Mm-hmm. Here's a person who obviously loved Kay,
yes.
Loved animals, and really was committed to her care. And his final wish was that she not be punished and take care of Kay for me,
yes.
his deathbed wish. And we don't know if that was carried out the way he wanted it to or not, but we'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, do you think we're going to get another elephant at Temescal Park Zoo?
I am highly doubtful. And if we ever got another elephant, we would have to get another three elephants. The AZA, which is the accrediting organization for zoos, has changed their rules, and they are supportive of elephants being in threes, and that they cannot be lone elephants. And there are certain acreage or, you know, how big their cage has to be, how many keepers there has to be. That is an expensive investment. And I am okay if Mesker Zoo decides not to make that investment, because we are already, you know, it's difficult to manage a zoo, especially one that isn't in a public-private partnership. Ours is totally public. So that would be a difficult thing for them to do.
Well, you certainly are passionate about elephants, and I'm sure other critters as well.
Yes.
Definitely. And this documentary, how long does it run?
It is an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's we on WNIN Channel 9.
Well, we're looking forward to that. And we also want to thank you, Aaron Gibson, for sharing your journalistic zeal to find out the truth about what happened to Kay. And I'm sure the audience is eager to see your film, Two Elephants. I'm equally sure you're anxious to raise increased awareness about the future of our wildlife, both large and small. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Next week on 2 Main Street, we go to the movies with local reviewer Ted Haycraft. Ted shares his list of the best movies ever. Find out if any of your favorite films are on that list, and find out what reviewers look for when deciding whether a film is a hit or a dud. 2 Main Street on 88.3 WNIN-FM airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11, and our interviews are also online at WNIN.org.